Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. The Time Special Edition, The Science of Alzheimer's, What It Is, How It Touches Us, and Hope, describes a war fought on many fields, studies involving infections, navigational skills, toxic air pollution, and young people's blood are all contributing to our understanding of the disease. New drugs and breakthroughs in early detection are also encouraging. While progress may be slow, each new step offers hope that this devastating disease might be diagnosed and treated more successfully. I'll begin with a war fought on many fields. Science's ongoing battle against Alzheimer's disease plays out in labs, universities, and hospitals around the world. Every day there are victories and defeats, advances and retreats. Here are a few dispatches from the field, all suggesting that progress, however incremental, is being steadily made. Why dementia rates may be slowing down. The older we get, the more memories we lose, and the more scrambled our thoughts may become. The problem may not be Alzheimer's, but some form of dementia, many experts believe is unavoidable if we live long enough. Yet a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine challenges that gloomy wisdom. Working with data from the long-running Framingham Heart Study, which began in the 1940s and continues to follow the original group, as well as their children and their children's children, scientists say rates of dementia may actually be decreasing rather than climbing. Looking at a group of 5,205 people aged 60 and older who had regular tests of their cognitive function for decades, Dr. Sudha Seshadri and her colleagues found that dementia declined on average by 20% in each decade from the 1970s to the 2000s. Only people with a high school education or more showed such declines, and the types of dementia related to problems with circulation showed the sharpest declines. That makes sense, Seshadri says, since dementia can indeed be connected to problems in circulation. And the Framingham Heart Study looks at risk factors for heart disease, which also include circulation-related factors such as blood pressure. Even when she adjusted for treatment when the subjects might have been getting for those conditions, however, the drop in dementia rates remained significant, suggesting, she says, that there is something here. That something could be lifestyle. While obesity and diabetes are increasing, and both can contribute to dementia, other trends may be counteracting their effects, including basic changes in exercise and diet. Seshadri says the Framingham study data did not include good information on the subject's exercise habits in the 1970s, so she wasn't able to analyze how physically active patterns changed and whether they affected the incidence of dementia. But current data collection is better and dementia surveillance has improved too. Changes in lifestyle could be especially helpful for certain groups of people. In another study published in Alzheimer's and Dementia, the Journal of the Alzheimer's Association, researchers found that rates of dementia are highest among African Americans and Native Americans. While genetic factors could be partly responsible, previous studies of health disparities among racial and ethnic groups also show that socioeconomic factors, including education, cultural norms, and other behaviors like making a habit of monitoring health, may be equally important. These results emphasize that dementia is beatable, Seshadri says. For all the broadly good news that these findings show, there is countervailing bad news, too. Even as the incidence of dementia goes down, the mortality rate for people who do develop Alzheimer's disease is going up. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Alzheimer's death rates have increased 88% since 1999, making the disease the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. On Alzheimer's patients' death certificates, problems like respiratory arrest or infections are often listed as the immediate cause of death, but the CDC numbers account for the underlying dementia that led to bodily breakdowns. One positive, or at least poignant, finding in the report is that the share of Alzheimer's patients who die at home has risen from 14 to 25%. That suggests that more family members are caring for loved ones struggling with this cruelest of diseases, that offered by Alice Park. And now, are infections the hidden problem? Alzheimer's disease may be the result of a byproduct that builds up in the brain when it fights infections, according to a 2016 study. The finding, if proven, could change the way the medical community thinks about the disease and the development of possible treatments for it. Researchers have long known that the amyloid proteins that make up brain plaques are a key cause of Alzheimer's. But what's the cause of the proteins? There are a lot of answers to that question, including genes, environmental, and overall health. But researchers writing in the journal Science Translational Medicine suggest that amyloid buildup may also happen as a protective measure when the brain is trying to fight off infection, and that Alzheimer's occurs when the infection causes too much amyloid buildup. As people age, it may be easier for infections to reach the brain, triggering the amyloid accumulation and spurring the cascade of problems that lead to the disease. The authors made the discovery by infecting brain cells in lab dishes and studying how amyloids form in response. Ultimately, the findings could lead scientists to reconsider the way they go about developing drugs for Alzheimer's. As Scientific American reports, it may be that a little amyloid protein is good for the brain, and instead of getting rid of all of it, researchers may want to focus on ways to lower the levels. We might want to think about just dialing it down, study author and neurologist Rudolf Tanzi of Harvard University tells Scientific American. That approach gets support from studies of genes that regulate amyloid production and that point to a similar drug strategy. More work is needed to determine whether the new findings are definitive, but other experts are calling the findings provocative. That was offered by Alexandra Seferlin. Poor navigational skills could be an early sign of Alzheimer's, another study says. Plenty of people have a terrible sense of direction, and with GPS-equipped cars taking over a lot of the pathfinding for us, we're not getting much practice anymore. But if you were once a first-rate navigator and are now having a harder time remembering directions in new surroundings, that might be an early sign of the cognitive decline associated with Alzheimer's, according to a study in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease by researchers from Washington University in St. Louis. These findings suggest that navigational tasks designed to assess a mental mapping strategy could represent a powerful new tool for detecting the very earliest Alzheimer's disease-related changes in cognition. The study's author, Denise Head, who is an associate professor of psychological and brain sciences at Washington University, told UPI. The researchers stressed that the connection is hardly absolute and that sometimes a bad sense of direction is just a bad sense of direction. Well, there may be a herpes-Alzheimer's link. Or not. Alzheimer's is like a game of Mad Libs. Throw out the name of any disease and someone is probably looking for a way it raises your Alzheimer's risk. Lately, that's been true of herpes simplex virus 1, HSV-1, or oral herpes, but the rumored link has been exaggerated. The recent chatter began in a 2016 editorial in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, in which the author cited the disproportionate number of Alzheimer's patients with active HSV-1 infections. Add to that some existing theories that viral and bacterial infections in general may exacerbate Alzheimer's plaque formation, and you've got your causation. But it's not causation, of course, it's association. Most Alzheimer's researchers dismiss the theory, pointing out that up to 80% of people carry HSV1, and that as Alzheimer's weakens the immune system of its victims, all manner of infections tend to flare up. Research into a potential link will continue, but for now, there's probably little to fear. Toxic air pollution can penetrate the brain. A toxic particle found in polluted urban areas can infiltrate the brain, potentially contributing to degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, according to a 2016 research. The study, published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, adds to growing evidence showing that even low level of air pollution harm human health. Many previous studies have demonstrated how pollution adversely affects the cardiovascular system, causing lung and heart disease. But scientists are increasingly realizing that the effects could extend to other areas like the brain. Researchers behind the study found that the pollutant magnetite enters the brain through the olfactory nerve, the same fiber that connects the nose to the brain. Air pollution remains a top global health threat despite decades of efforts to stop it. Recent research from the World Health Organization found that more than 80% of the world's urban population lives in areas where air quality regularly fails health standards. Several studies have shown that air pollution contributes to millions of premature deaths annually. Even in the comparatively clean cities in the U.S. and Europe, pollution continues to cause health problems, largely because of the prevalence of diesel vehicles, despite government initiatives to address it. The 2016 study's researchers found high levels of magnetite in tissue from the brains of 37 people who had lived in two polluted urban areas, Mexico City and Manchester, England. Previous research has shown a strong correlation between the rates of exposure to particulate matter and various diseases. The latest research suggests a potential mechanism to explain how the pollution could cause degenerative diseases of the brain, too. But determining the precise nature of the possible link will require further study. That offered by Justin Worland. Now, young people's blood could help treat Alzheimer's. Older people, especially older unwell people, can only envy the health and vigor of the young. Now, there may be a way to get some of it and to treat dementia in the process. Researchers at Stanford University announced the first results of a novel study in which they infused blood from young donors into a small number of people with mild to moderate forms of Alzheimer's disease in hopes of reducing the disease's symptoms. The study, though unconventional, is rooted in solid science. Stanford scientists have pioneered a process called parabiosis, in which young and old mice are connected by the same blood system. In the first studies, they were surprised to see that the young mice started showing signs of an older metabolism and chronic disease. The next studies, in which the older mice not only were connected to the young mice by blood, but also received infusions of the young blood, were even more eye-opening. The older mice started to show improvements in memory, namely the ability to perform mazes and find a known target after a period of time. That inspired another group of researchers at Stanford to see whether the same brain changes might be seen in human beings, and specifically in those with the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. To conduct the test, the researchers recruited 9 volunteers and asked them to come into the lab every week for 4 weeks to receive a unit of plasma from a young person, which they obtained from the Stanford Blood Bank, or a placebo solution. Next, the subjects were left alone for 6 weeks and were then switched to the young plasma or the placebo for 4 more weeks, whichever they hadn't received in the first period. Another group of 9 volunteers, recruited later, received only the young plasma for 4 weeks. "We were expecting to find that the plasma was safe," said Dr. Sharon Shaw, clinical associate professor of neurology and neurological sciences at Stanford and lead investigator of the trial. "I wasn't expecting to find any change in cognitive measures." But that's exactly what she and her team found. Among the 18 people, it was clear that the experiment seemed to be doing something. Those receiving the plasma showed statistically significant improvements in some measures of independence, such as their ability to shop on their own, control their finances, and balance their checkbooks. The study did not look at changes in cognitive functions such as memory or changes in Alzheimer's markers like protein plaques in the brain. While it's not clear how the young plasma is working to improve the subject's ability to function, Shaw says it's possible that plasma in younger people contains factors that are regenerative and help cells and tissues, including those in the brain, remain healthy. The next step involves replicating the results in a larger group of people to verify the findings. If they hold up, then Alzheimer's researchers may have another strategy to investigate that could lead to a treatment. Keith Fargo, director of scientific programs at the Alzheimer's Association, says that even if the results are repeated, it's not likely that people will be lining up for infusions of young blood to protect them from Alzheimer's. Researchers will likely follow up with studies of what factors in young plasma made it effective, which would give scientists potential targets for drugs made from those factors, he says. "I do not envision a future where young people will be grabbing young plasma off of the shelf to do infusions." Well, now we're going to a section called Expanding the Drug Arsenal. A lot of things go biologically wrong in an Alzheimer's patient, but the unhappy fact does have an upside. Reverse any one of those breakdowns and you might reverse the disease too. Here are a few ways researchers are trying to do just that. Taming inflammation. So many of the most common chronic diseases, from heart problems and cancer to arthritis, are driven by the immune response known as inflammation. It's the body sending in the cavalry, a flood of defensive cells that include antibodies, immune proteins that detect foreign invaders such as bacteria and viruses, and other factors to defend itself. In the case of Alzheimer's, the troops are deployed to respond to amyloid building up abnormally in the brain, and that should be good. But the result is overkill. The help turns to harm as the immune cells begin to destroy the nerve cells they're meant to protect. Seres Spear, a biotech company, is developing what may be the first anti-inflammatory for Alzheimer's. In early trials involving people with mild cognitive impairment, the drug reduced the destructive effect of the immune cells and helped improve thinking abilities over more than a year. Fighting tau. Along with amyloid, the tau protein is probably the most popular target for drug makers. Because it appears so late in the disease, however, any therapies have a huge hurdle to overcome. Since much of the damage to the nerves is already done and key brain areas relating to cognition are starting to shrink. Still, if anti-tau treatments can be introduced just as the protein is starting to cause the breakdown of nerve fibers, then they might be able to stop the disease from progressing too far. Researchers are testing one compound that can keep tau's normally organized and aligned structure intact and prevent it from deteriorating into a tangled mess. In animal tests, the agent stabilized the chaotic neurons and even helped animals improve their cognitive performance on tests. There is also a vaccine developed by Axon Neuroscience to help the body generate antibodies to the tau protein. So far, it appears to be safe, and it helped a group of 30 people make the proper antibodies against tau. The company has enrolled 208 people with mild to moderate Alzheimer's to further test whether targeting tau can reduce memory problems and slow cognitive decline. And introducing insulin. More commonly associated with diabetes, insulin may play a role in keeping the brain healthy too. Just as cells in a person with diabetes no longer respond to insulin, so too the brain cells in Alzheimer's patients lose their ability to use insulin to break down sugar for energy. Without that fuel, the cells start to wither. So scientists are testing the idea of giving people with mild to moderate Alzheimer's sprays of insulin through the nose so that it reaches the brain more quickly. A group at Albert Einstein College of Medicine is also testing whether the diabetes drug metformin, which lowers the amount of sugar produced by the liver, can help the brain to more efficiently pull out circulating sugar and use it to keep nerve networks functioning. Now going on to breakthroughs in early detection. New techniques make it possible to spot and treat Alzheimer's decades before symptoms appear, by Markham Hyde. There may be no more difficult conversation in all of medicine than the one that takes place between a doctor and a newly diagnosed Alzheimer's patient. The doctor must explain that Alzheimer's is fatal in all cases and that there are no proven ways to slow the disease's progression, let alone stop it. Patients are often told to set their affairs in order immediately because the laws of their mental faculties may soon render them incapable of doing so. A roughly 5 in 8/10 million Americans currently battle Alzheimer's have had this conversation with a doctor. That number is expected to triple by 2050. Considering all of the progress of modern medicine, it's gutting for patients to hear that experts have not developed effective weapons against the most common form of dementia and the sixth most common cause of death among Americans. But it's tough to beat an invisible enemy. And until recently, researchers could get a good look at Alzheimer's disease only after a patient's death with an autopsy of the brain. Alzheimer's doesn't show up on MRI or CAT scan, so we had no way of knowing for sure if a patient had the disease, says Dr. Paul Aysen, a professor of neurology and director of the Alzheimer's Therapeutic Research Institute at the University of Southern California, Keck School of Medicine. The causes of dementia are myriad, so even experts in brain disorders would misdiagnose a patient with Alzheimer's 20 to 25% of the time, he says. Also complicating matters, Alzheimer's tends to strike older adults who may be grappling with overlapping brain disorders. What we've learned from two decades of pathology studies is that late-onset dementia, that is, the common type that occurs after age 65, is often caused by multiple brain diseases, says Dr. Gil Rabinovici, an Alzheimer's researcher and distinguished professor in memory and aging at the University of California, San Francisco. Usually, people who develop dementia in their 80s have Alzheimer's, but they also have age-related brain changes, vascular disease in the brain, Lewy bodies, usually two or three other things going on. Not only does this make diagnosing Alzheimer's tricky, it also complicates the matter of developing effective remedies, he says. All that is the bad news. The good news is that everything is changing quickly. One significant area of progress has to do with experts' understanding of the disease's underlying pathology, or exactly what goes wrong in the brain of Alzheimer's patients that leads to dementia. We know now that people with Alzheimer's symptoms typically have a collection of abnormal protein building up in the brain, said Dr. Risa Sperling, a professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School and director of the Center for Alzheimer's Research and Treatment at Boston Brigham and Women's Hospital. These proteins appear in two forms, as amyloid plaques that accumulate outside nerve cells and as tau tangles that clump abnormally inside nerve cells, Sperling says. Alzheimer's experts have been debating for the past 30 years over whether one to blame or the other. Well, now it looks like it's both, she says. We know a person doesn't get dementia without both amyloid and tau, and they are related to each other even before symptoms emerge. These insights and other groundbreaking revelations are due in large part to advances in the medical community's ability to see and track Alzheimer's disease in living people. During the past half decade, researchers have developed new forms of positive emission tomography, or PET scans, that allow doctors to peer inside the brains of patients. These imaging techniques, along with recently developed spinal fluid analysis and blood-based biomarker tests, help experts spot and diagnose Alzheimer's early, in some cases long before symptoms emerge. Our ability to monitor the disease in living people is new, and it's a major breakthrough, USC's Aysen says. Other experts agree. One of the reasons we haven't gotten to a drug treatment yet is this lack of precision in identifying Alzheimer's, said Dr. John Trigonowski, a professor of geriatric medicine and director of the Alzheimer's Disease Core Center at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine. Now that we have established a biomarker for identifying the disease, I'm hopeful we'll soon find solutions. Already, these new diagnostic tools have yielded some eye-opening discoveries. One of them, the protein plaques and tangles that are the hallmarks or likely drivers of Alzheimer's disease, may start to accumulate 10 to 20 years before a patient's symptoms emerge. Harvard's Sperling says that this is a big deal because most of the existing drugs that aim at curing or treating Alzheimer's by lowering the production of the harmful proteins or improving the brain's ability to remove them have been tested only on older patients, many of whom already are symptomatic. She compares this to prescribing the statin to a heart disease patient in an ICU. It's too late. The statin can't fix anything at that point. Now we know why our clinical trials are failing, Aysen said. Along with Sperling, he's helping to lead a large-scale study, partly funded by the National Institute on Aging, that assesses the effectiveness of some promising new drugs. Well, that is amazing news, certainly reason to foster hope. More from this Time Special Edition soon. Thanks for listening. And until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for this show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.